Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from Costco Business Center, offering delivery to Anchorage Air Cargo companies for shipments to rural Alaska for business and home. More at CostcoBusinessDelivery.com.
Good morning, Alaska, and welcome to Line One, your health connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. Last May, Nate Kyle and C.B. Brady from the Alaska Center for the Blind and Visually Impaired joined me to discuss what it's like living in Alaska for people who experience blindness or visual impairment. Recently, C.B. reached out to me because he wanted to address a topic that impacts most Alaskans who are living with a disability. Living in Alaska in the wintertime can be difficult for many of us. The darkness, the cold, and the ice and snow make it challenging to get out, to be active, and to stay connected. Imagine trying to face these challenges if you are elderly, blind, or in a wheelchair. Without clear sidewalks, people who cannot drive are often faced with long winter of isolation, the inability to get to doctor's appointments, visit friends, or even get to work. So what's the real impact for those struggling with mobility issues, and what is being done to fix it? Well, joining me from the Alaska Center for the Blind and Visually Impaired are Chief Executive Officer C.B. Brady and Program Director Nate Kyle. Welcome to the program. Appreciate you both coming in.
Thanks for having us again.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's exciting. Well, I got to remind people that we are a call-in show and we value listener participation. So if you have a question for my guests or a comment about today's topic, there are three ways to connect with us. If you are in the Anchorage area, our phone number is 907-550-8433. If you are listening outside of Anchorage, you can reach us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And the last way to get your question or comment on the air is to email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. I got to spell out line1, L-I-N-E-O-N-E, @alaskapublic.org, and we'll do our best to get your questions on the air. Okay, so let's, start off. We're going to go through a few things. You got some interesting programs for youth going, and there's a couple of things y'all want to talk about. But I think let's start off with the topic. I mean, last May, I think we touched on it right at the end of the show, but it was sunny out. And
right.
We weren't dealing with like sidewalks. And then, you know, Christmas time, we had those two dumps and it shut us down, which I don't really remember being shut down like that, missing all that school. It seemed like something was different, but I was talking to CB earlier, right before we went on the air, and I said, it seems like this winter was worse. And he's like, no, they're all pretty bad for us.
that's true.
Okay.
I don't remember as many school days though. Definitely seems like the most.
All right. Well, let's start with that and talk like, what's the challenge? Obviously, I mean, we kind of know what it is, but what's it like for somebody in a wheelchair or who can't, you know, see the sidewalk, or because there isn't a sidewalk, none of us could see it. But
sure.
Like, what's that challenge? What does that do as far as like your ability to connect?
It hampers it a lot, obviously. And a lot of people, like you said, isolation, a lot of people will just decide to stay in and not go anywhere because they are pretty sure they can't get there. And by the time you try, you might have been too late for the bus or whatnot. My personal way to travel is the bus. And full disclosure, I'm on the Public Transit Advisory Board and I work with the People Mover System quite a bit. And I do want to give them kudos. They do an excellent job at maintaining bus stops to get on and off. There's only four gentlemen, four workers that maintain all of the bus stops. And I think they do a really good job of it. The challenge for us or someone in a wheelchair or your grandmother or mother is getting to the bus stop. And I think everybody who's listening has seen somebody walking down the street.
Yeah.
And that's out of necessity. Sometimes you have to get somewhere and you can't afford an Uber or a taxi, mm-hmm. and don't have a friend to give you a ride at the time. And so that's a real challenge. I think there's been 11 vehicle pedestrian collisions this winter. And there's been 2 deaths recently. At some point, I hope that the city prioritizes pedestrian travel. I think if you look around the world, there are what we recognize as winter cities. And I think Anchorage could be one of the best. Our trail systems, as far as single track advocates, Parks and Rec, Downtown Anchorage Partnership, all these entities are doing a good job maintaining their trails.
Right.
But our state and our city is failing. And there is a mix of both. It's not all city. There are state highways and municipal highways in Anchorage.
I saw a guy in a wheelchair doing exactly what y'all are talking about, like going down the road because the sidewalks were piled up and the road was thin and the traffic was having to go around this person.
It's sad.
It's sad and it's dangerous. Mm-hmm. I mean, that people are flying by and there's nowhere to walk. So the kids obviously couldn't get to school. So Nate, what's your experience of travel in winter in Alaska?
Well, for your listeners, I'm totally blind, and it's kind of like you're thrust into a third world country or early Alaskan experience. You know, we have a client who's a female, and she's during that snowfall trying to do what she needs to do each and every day, and she's belly crawling over snowbanks. Mm-hmm. Or you're going to cross the street and there's a medium there, and there except there's this 3 foot, 4 foot of snow in front of you where you would normally be able to detect the medium and see where you are as far as crossing the street, whether it's 4 lanes of traffic or, you know, whatever. It's very unsettling. And so at that point, people start to, you know, feel like they're not empowered, they lose their autonomy, and they kind of check out. And so that's the blind demographic, but, you know, it goes into the lives of seniors, other disabled parts of the community. And so just, you know, we don't have all the solutions, but we want the awareness so people who, you know, have a bigger brain than I do can maybe come up with some real solutions. We know that there are good models out there. And if we can keep, you know, beating the drum for awareness, maybe some people can come up with some good innovative ideas where they decide to prioritize this, not just for our low incident of blindness, but for this whole demographic, because it's a reflection on our community, the leaders. What do we value in our communities and the people who are typically marginalized?
Yeah, that's a really good point. It's the vulnerable in our population that really need that support. And I guess before we go on further with that, I made a mistake here and didn't really introduce you guys well enough, where you're from, what you do there. I just kind of rolled on, like, because I know you, we talked last time. So let's just take a second and back up. And I'll start with you, Nate. What's your... You mentioned that you were totally blind.
Correct.
And let's get some of the terminology right. I'm probably butchering it. But go ahead and give us a little bit of your story and what you're doing at the Alaska Center for the Blind and Visually Impaired.
Alaska Center for the Blind and Visually Impaired. We're the only training center in Alaska. We're based here in Anchorage. We have a building. We have dorms. We bring people in from around the state. They may stay for 2 months, 6 months. Some people may come in who live locally just for day services, training. And my role there is the program director. And so I just kind of oversee the programs, client interactions, what instructors are doing, connecting with partner agencies, whether it's university, school district, DVR, and the grants that we use to serve clients in remote areas, our rural grant, older blind grant, Matsu Valley grant, and what we call a Braille grant that helps us to support school districts that may not have the funding to support some of their blind students because, you know, here in Anchorage, we're going over the school deficit with our budget. Mm-hmm. So I'm able to be part of those things. And I started off at the center as a client, you know, 20 years ago. So this is kind of from I've been cradled now in this. And so I get to do a full circle. And I've been at the center, I guess, 7 years, maybe this month, on staff. Started off as a technology person, employment specialist, youth transition coordinator. So I kind of wore all those hats. It's like the hotel where the person checks you in and they change the hat and they're the maintenance man. I've been all of those things. And It's been great. You know, it's a passionate. Everyone there is passionate about what they do, and they're passionate about being change agents.
Mm-hmm. All right, and you haven't always been blind.
No, I have not. I lost my vision 15 years old here in Alaska. It was a gun accident. And, you know, like many, I didn't understand the value of what we call blind rehabilitation, training, learning non-visual skills. So it really wasn't until I was 25. I kind of floated around and I fell into a lot of stereotypical barriers about being disabled, what I couldn't do, what I shouldn't have to do, what other people could or should do for me. And now I know that, you know, with the tools I have now, all of those things were not true.
Now, at 15 years old in Alaska, that's a while ago.
Yeah, that's 1991.
You don't look super old, but that's still been a minute. What was available to you as far as, like, because I know Dan Bigley, you know, who I'm sure you all know quite well, he left the state and went to a training center when he lost his eyesight. And what was available to you back then as a kid, as a 15-year-old?
I would say that, you know, that they still had services at the school district. The center was still here. But things were, you know, a little more rudimentary with technology, with some areas of the training. And then the thing, you know, with Dan is, you know, where we came from. You know, he came from a place where he was, you know, tracking to go to finish high school, to go to college.
Right.
And me, you know, minority single mom, that looked way different for me. And that's what we're going to see throughout, you know, the disabled communities, all these diversities that aren't always taken into account. So it takes more energy and effort to lean into people's lives because we're not simply just teaching somebody how to hold a cane. You know, we're really reaching into their lives and helping them to unpack other barriers that had to do with, you know, just different generational things that we have to help them to get to the point of autonomy and independence where they can reenter the workforce and have the tools to be productive, self-confident, and so forth.
I think that's a great point that you made about where people are in their lives and what kind of supports they have around them and really working with the whole person rather than just sending you off to a school and letting you learn how to read Braille and how to walk around with a cane, right? I mean, it's not that simple.
Look, we deal with meaning that we work with the Alaska Native community, and their family structure, their heritage, their traditions are, you know, where we're still outsiders. You live in Anchorage, right, and you go into a small village, you know, Stebbins or Unalakleet or wherever, and they're going to be reluctant to send their 17-year-old to Anchorage. Mm-hmm. You know, for them, that has, like, some trauma associated with it, sending your kids off. So we're really, again, trying to build these relationships, create awareness. And so it doesn't help if they see on the news that blind people are, you know, they can't walk around because they're falling, you know, they're walking through 3 feet of snow. You know, they want to see us supported also and be comfortable sending their kids to us.
Yeah, accessibility seems like a basic right. I mean, would we call it a right? We put up ramps everywhere.
And it's a law.
Yeah.
1990, 33 years ago, ADA.
Yeah, so how does that, okay, well, CB, you can take us from here, give us a little intro to yourself, and then let's talk about why it's not happening if it's a law and why it doesn't apply to snow.
So CB Brady, I was on the board for 12 years at the center. I take a step back. When I was 28 years old, I knew I had a blinding eye disease. I came back to Alaska, and joined the Center for the Blind and Visually Impaired as a board member, and then became the board president for 10 years, all the while realizing I'm going blind, and I better put my money where my mouth is and start getting training. And so actually Nate was my first assistive technology instructor, which is computers. And so similar to Nate, I've been able to see the center operate from three different vantage points, see, you know, the executive director role, the board role, and a client. And that's given me a real sense of pride. And I say that because walking in and out of that building on a daily basis, you truly see lives changing. And And like you two were discussing, you come from different backgrounds. There's different predicaments in everybody's life. But the one constant when they come to the center is they're growing every day. Mm-hmm. And to see someone who's low vision or completely blind work in a manual skills wood shop with an instructor that's completely blind, you can only imagine how much confidence comes from that.
Yeah, that's powerful.
Yeah, and then I do want to go back to a little bit on the sidewalks as far as we're not here to complain.
Right.
It comes with the territory. And like Nate said, whether it's reasonable people finding reasonable solutions, that all plays into it. But I think if as a community we prioritize it and we just identify if there is a cost, what is the cost? Let's just identify it and let the voters decide if it's something that mm-hmm. they want to push towards their assembly members or the who they vote for mayor, or this position or that position. I think it's just got to be identified so that if the snow removal budget's $100, but sidewalks are $50, well, let's just say it's $150 and we can only fund $100. At least we all know, hey, we're doing this intentionally. Right. I don't know the reasons why. I believe manpower and resources are probably number one. I've heard equipment is partly in there. And again, there's a lot going on. I don't want to complain. We got hammered with a lot of snow. I just want to bring awareness to our community that there's a lot of us stuck at home. And it could be your mom and dad that decide not to go down and play pinochle because they can't get down the sidewalk. And that's not a quality of life that anybody wants to live. They want to be able to get out and enjoy just like we can on our trails. And that's what we're hoping for. And also we forgot to thank you for the platform again.
Yes. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure having you guys last time. And, I knew there was some more stuff to talk about. I think about people that have to get to work, mm-hmm. you know, like, I mean, that would be really hard to have a job that, I mean, Uber would cost is
it's just cost prohibitive. Yeah. It really is. I walk to work a lot of days and it's about 4 miles and it's $20 ride each way. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's
kind of like being a European, like where they do a lot of foot travel there. Uh-huh. That's the blind community when we feel comfortable and safe, you know, and like the person who was in the news. Their challenge, they're just trying to go to the store because one, Uber's not, it's cost prohibitive, and they just want to get groceries. And so if you think that you're going to be subjected to something like that, just going to get groceries, it's very stressful.
Yeah.
And we all sort of, I mean, got a little taste of what that isolation does during COVID. You didn't have mm-hmm. to have a disability or to mm-hmm. find yourself at home alone, not able to go out and go to dinner with your friends, not go to the movies. I mean, people who are, you know, don't have a disability, they could still go, you know, mm-hmm. drive somewhere and go for a ski or mm-hmm. whatever. Mm-hmm. But that social isolation is so impactful. And I just can't imagine what it would be like living in Alaska and being mm-hmm. shut in essentially mm-hmm. for yeah. weeks at a time. I'm sure like they get them cleared and then it snows. Do y'all know how long it takes generally to clear all the sidewalks? I know they got like those.
I believe there's a 72-hour guideline. Is that what they're trying to get to? But the December hammer was about 30 days before everything was cleared up.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, as we talk, have the discussions, it's one thing to know you have to have that goal, but I think it could help be a motivator for people to know this is the why.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, this is the why it's a priority, not just this is your job, guys, get out here and do it. So it's really making that public awareness of this is an essential thing for many people. And what you just said about COVID, it's interesting you say that because that's the essence of the community that was captured in a lot of groups during COVID. They were saying, this is what we experience all the time.
Right.
This whole isolation, being at home, this is our life. And so if people can go back to that February, that March, that's what a lot of people are feeling every single day. And then you remove one avenue or option, which is getting out and traveling. You're adding to those years of feeling isolation.
Are there any, and this just popped into my head because I don't know the numbers, and CB said he didn't know the numbers of people that rely on public transportation. Nate, do you have any idea what those numbers are?
I don't have any idea. You know, with anecdotally, our average client, it's going to be 7 out of 10. Maybe there are 3 who have a spouse or a friend who can get them to appointments, but most of the time it's going to be Anchor Ride, it's going to be People Mover, and when they can afford it, Uber.
Are there any, you just triggered another thought, and maybe I'll save it for when we come back because we're at our first break. So I'm going to go ahead and take that. If you're just tuning in, today my guests are Chief Executive Officer CB Brady and Program Director Nate Kyle from the Alaska Center for the Blind and Visually Impaired. We started off the first 20 minutes talking about sidewalks and snow clearing and some of the challenges that folks from anybody with any disability or anybody in a wheelchair, elderly, it's not just the blind, but there's a lot of people in Alaska that we see, you know, walking in the streets because they can't get to the sidewalk. So we were talking about that. And then when we come back, we're going to get into some of the programming and some of the things that they're doing with youth. So stay tuned with us. After this short break, we will continue with more of our conversation. I'm Prentice Pemberton, and you're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line One on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. Money is generated through estate and deferred gifts enable public radio to provide our listeners, you, with the level of programming excellence you've come to expect. It may also reduce income and estate taxes. Consult your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more.
Welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. If you're just joining us today, my guests are Chief Executive Officer CB Brady and Program Director Nate Kyle from the Alaska Center for the Blind and Visually Impaired. If you have a question for CB or Nate or a comment or a story you'd like to share with us, please don't hesitate to give us a call or send us an email. Our email is line1@alaskapublic.org. Our Anchorage phone number, if you're local, is 907-550-8433. That's 550-8433. And toll free from anywhere you might be listening, 1-888-353-5752. Okay. We have a call, so we'll go ahead and we'll go to James in Anchorage. Go ahead. You're on line one.
Yes, this is James Sprott. I'm a retired physician. I've lived in Alaska many years, and I'm legally blind, but not totally blind. I can see about 2,400, can walk around, ride a bicycle, can't drive for years. And I need some help with computer skills and cell phone skills and setting up my computer to be better able to see it without using gigantic magnifying glass all the time. And I don't know where that sort of help would be available.
Well, I think you have the right people here to answer that question. So which one of you guys wants to tackle that? I appreciate the call.
You looking at me, Nate?
I'm welcome to you.
Thank you for calling in. We obviously have the services and the employees available to help you on any of those needs, particularly assistive technology. Getting you into the center, you said you were retired, is that right?
Yes, I am. I'm a retired physician. I've practiced in Alaska about 50 years.
Okay, so the only...
I've been to the center once when I first started losing my sight. So I kind of have a record there, although I haven't been back since about 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, we're on Taft Road off of Spinard for everybody. And I think if you want to talk to me offline, we could set something up. I'm not sure how that works, Prentice, but just give him my information.
He can call the
center.
Call the center.
Call the Alaska Center for the Blind, and I'll say it twice. And they'll re-air tonight, or you can look it up, but it's 907-248-7770. That's 907-248-7770. And yes, James, we can assist you with this. We have a grant that's provided by the state. It's called the Older Blind Grant. And that would allow us to be able to set up some time with you to discuss your needs and what kind of, you know, training, instruction we could help you with. So that is definitely a yes, and appreciate you calling in for that.
And do I have to speak to anyone or just call the Center for Design and tell them if I want?
The name that you're going to ask for is Bonnie Lucas. That's Bonnie Lucas. She is our older blind coordinator, and she'll be a good place to start.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Awesome.
And
thanks.
Thank you for 50 years of servicing Alaska as a physician. Thank you.
Okay. Appreciate it.
All right. Well, thank you, James, for the call. And those are the kind of calls that I'm sure warms y'all's
for sure
heart, right? Like having people hear it on the radio and then reaching out and saying, mm-hmm. I need some help with that. And I bet the technology these days is getting kind of wild.
I can work with students on spreadsheets and 3D graphs and pie charts and high level, you know, people are doing high level math. But, you know, just drill down and think, you have a person like him calling. How often are we using our computers? Every day. How many tasks? And so once you lose that ability, man, start thinking about that every day, what you would lose the ability to do or have this great challenge to do some basic things.
Phone included,
yes.
Yeah, the phone. You can do all sorts of stuff on the phone. Mm-hmm. So I imagine there's stuff that I can't even think could happen, but
there's people trading crypto on their phone, blind people. Dial it down to that. If you can do that, you can do anything.
You can do just about all of it.
I usually tell people when it comes to navigating computers, whether it's the phone or a desktop, if I say to Nate, you know, let's go to Prentice's bio page from nowhere, and he can, it's never even close. Like his ability to get there so much more efficient than me, who I still am struggling trying to use a mouse, and I shouldn't be,
right?
You know, trying to find that cursor. It's as big as it can possibly be. But yeah, no, the ability that Nate has and Nate teaches and that our instructors teach is life-changing, and I hope it will help anybody else out there who wants to come call us.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so that's, let's just keep rolling with this vein. If somebody like James is out there and they're wanting some assistance in figuring stuff out, like what's the process? I mean, you call and you set up an appointment, but what can you expect and how do you get there? Like, is there transportation available? Do you have supports for that?
Sidewalks.
Yes, you can walk.
First point of entry, there's two points of entry. One is calling to schedule a low vision clinic. That's generally a 1 hour appointment where someone comes in. It's free of cost. It's taken care of by donors and grants. And they would meet with a low vision specialist to discuss their eye condition, what's working, what's not, kind of their usable functional vision. They might look at some magnifiers, some different devices they could use in their house. Maybe it's a darker cutting board. Maybe it's an Alexa, maybe something like that. And we provide a $100 grant to where they can order stuff that we may show them in the clinic or through catalogs. And then we would refer them to DVR, and that's the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation. They're part of the Department of Labor. And they go to DVR and they say, you know, I'm losing my vision or I'm blind and I need training. And DVR says, okay, you need training. Do you want to be in the workforce? So this is going to be people who are still ready to be in the workforce or want to be trained to return to the workforce. And if they connect with DVR, DVR covers the cost for a lot of extensive training. you know, thousands and thousands of dollars. And we work hand in hand with them. If you're a senior, then we have a grant that covers a lot of that training. And if you're a youth who's in the school district, we work very closely with ASD to provide supports for any areas that maybe they can't cover. And we work with DVR to cover those costs as well.
And then rural grant, we want to mention that?
Oh, yeah. So the rural grant allows us to connect with people outside of the Anchorage area. And it's we can fly to different rural communities to do low vision clinics. But we're also talking about providing some opportunities to fly people into Anchorage where they would come for a low vision clinic, maybe even an assessment, and they would stay in our residential dorms if it, you know, if that were appropriate, a good fit for them. And we're going to see what that looks like between now and June as we finish our grant year.
So that's is that a new thing? I mean, have you had dorms for a while?
We have, yes.
All right. And what are those? What are the dorms used for?
Just for when clients come to us from out of town and want to stay there so they can get training every day.
Okay. And so it's kind of, it is kind of like what Dan Bigley did when he flew out, but you guys do it there. Somebody lives there. You have a kitchen set up in the apartment. They learn how to navigate.
There's three bedrooms and one bathroom shared. And we have a total of up to 12 individuals can stay at any time, which is more than we have ever had.
Okay.
And then three kitchens. Mm-hmm. One is sort of a staff kitchen, one's a training kitchen, and the other one's sort of a supplemental training kitchen. And it works really well. They're able to navigate a day, you know, in a building that's just not so confined to one little room.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that those one little rooms when you can't walk outside, those walls close in on you really quick.
Yeah. And where we are in Spinard, I mean, for me, it's like it's a little gentrified area in its own way. A lot of great restaurants. We're near the Roosevelt Park area.
Okay.
Writer's Block Cafe. Big shout out to them because they're always supportive and
that's
always
a neat
welcoming.
Place.
Yes. So you have all these little neat restaurants, some little ramen places and arigatos. And I love Spinard. I'm a foodie. So, yeah, we get to put people in a neighborhood. We have bus stops around there, restaurants. There's a lot of people in the neighborhood that are used to seeing people travel around with a cane, so they're very, very nice and thoughtful. So it's a neat experience.
And let me just interject here. Regarding the low-vision clinics that we do, we are currently looking for a doctor to help support those low-vision clinics. And what that allows us to do is bill Medicare, Medicaid.
Yeah, an optometrist.
Yep. And we're also looking for a rural outreach coordinator, somebody who would like to go visit the different villages and interact with those people. And these are obviously trained, certified individuals, not just anybody. But, we're looking for a couple positions.
Mm-hmm.
Come join the team.
All right. So the doctor is critical in order for y'all to bill for your services.
Yeah. Yeah. It's during the low vision clinics. And so, like Nate said, we do it at no cost. We get some recovery from grants, but we would get full recovery if we were able to bill Medicaid, Medicare. So without a doctor, it's a challenge. We do it out of because it's the right thing to do, not because we're making any money.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right. There's not a ton of money-making vibes where you guys are. It's not what you're in it for.
Right.
You're there to change lives and improve them. And
for your listeners, I'm smiling because, you're very right.
Yeah. That's a big smile. It's a nice smile.
To help all Alaskans achieve success in life and work.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're about.
That's the mission statement?
That's the mission statement. And it's a big state. It's hard to say all Alaskans.
Yeah, and I imagine the challenges of being in the villages. I mean, do you have a lot of clients out in the villages? And what are some of the unique challenges out there?
It goes in waves. Last year, I think we had 223 individuals in 21 different cities or villages.
Okay.
So I could be off a little bit, but it's in that ballpark. And it's... before that, COVID shut it down pretty hard.
Mm-hmm.
Our O&M instructor came up with a creative thing where he would put a gift box of things together and ship it to them and then have either a FaceTime or a phone call and what works for you, what doesn't, and then they'd ship it back. That was a pretty innovative
Yeah, it was our rural travel kits, kind of doing the low vision clinic virtually, our version of remote medicine.
Yeah, it worked good.
Yeah, and I think the challenge is right now, COVID just shut a lot down. The infrastructure created new norms. And right. So out there, it was already challenging. And now with maybe some of the young adults who were used to, they got used to being at home around families more, it's even trickier to build the rapport to have them come out. But that's why we're doing stuff like this. You know, we get out on the radio and we let them know, you know, youth program coming up, low vision clinics, we'll fly you in for rural travel, fly youth in, maybe they'll stay at our dorms for the clinic, I mean, for the camp. We're trying to do our outreach, and we want to impact people's lives.
Yeah, you can't have the impact if people don't know what you're doing, mm-hmm. And that you're available for those services. All right, so we're just about up to our second break, but I do want to go back to the travel situation, because I had a question that mm-hmm. I didn't get answered or didn't get asked, so therefore it wouldn't be answered. And are there any like volunteer opportunities for people to, I mean, if people ever say, well, I'll drive people to the doctor, volunteer and come and do a, you know, take people to bingo, or is that something that people in the community, if they wanted to help out in the wintertime, especially?
Yes.
What do y'all got? I'm thinking of like one of those, you know, ride trees or phone trees where somebody mm-hmm. puts out I got an appointment here, mm-hmm. anybody can cover.
Yeah, we call CB. We're like, CB, get a ride for so-and-so. They're coming in from a village. We need them picked up at the airport. And it's a Sunday, so staff are off.
Well, there's a couple different ways and things that we do with that.
Is it a hard question?
No, it's just my mind's racing around, and okay. I'm trying not to say and ah the whole time. I want you to answer this one, Nate.
You know, the need is there, and so it is a matter of someone reaching out to us, whether it's, you know, going to the website for the Alaska Center for the Blind. I'm Nate Kyle. They can drop an email to me. They can drop an email to CB and say, hey, I heard you on the radio. I have some available time. And it may be giving people rides, and that could be an on-call. Maybe they tell us the window. They're available on the weekends, or they need 3 days' notice, okay. or they're on-call. And maybe there's another opportunity. Maybe someone has a stack of, like, paperwork for Alaska Housing, and they need someone to help fill it out.
Or
and
that PFD, person,
yeah, or PFD. So, you know, a lot of these unfortunate applications, like maybe food stamps, Medicaid, Medicare, a lot of those are not accessible yet. And so it's a big stack of paperwork, and we may need to volunteer for that.
And I wanted to think this through. The way people can volunteer is we have a volunteer form that, you know, they have to fill out, and then I believe I wanted to think this and get it right, but the insurance requirement is a minimum of $300,000. That's our insurance requirement for driving around our clients.
You have to have liability.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I started a few years ago based on kind of the same thing you're thinking is on my Facebook, I created a group called CB Rides, which is community-based rides. And I would just throw out, hey, on Tuesday at 4:00, I'm trying to get to APU. And someone would say, I got you. And that has been very effective. I've recently branched out and asked if they would be interested in helping other blind or visually impaired individuals. And there are a lot of volunteers. It's the juggle of any time you ask for help. Do you give enough notice? Does that person have time to react?
Right.
Things like that. And it doesn't always happen. I've stranded Nate many times, but
we're good. I made it today. I was 2 minutes under the wire without Nate.
I think there's a minute and 20 seconds left, Nate, before you get rolled in here all casual. I just had that idea. I thought, like, well, on Fridays, if I don't work, could I just call in December, January and say, hey, I can give rides every Friday?
That'd be awesome.
And people can – then you have your – clients call in and they need rides somewhere. How would you get that?
Right now, it's all sort of funneled through me, which is still fine because it's not a huge volume.
Right.
And I'll just reach out to you know, even my retired mom and her friends, you know, they love it, and they've gotten to know a lot of our clients.
They've taken people out to the valley, Eagle River. Yeah.
Like, where you gotta go, Homer?
They enjoy driving. They got time to kill and
listening ear.
Yeah, and listening ear. So that's family and friends have been very, very helpful. In fact, I spend more than I'd like to admit on Uber for convenience, and I was just thinking on the way here, how many people in the last year I've gotten rides from, and it's just hundreds. It's hundreds. Huh. The community is so, I mean, yeah, they're friends, they're family, but they don't have to do it,
right?
You know? And it's just such a, I'm very grateful having reflect on that on the way here. And I think Nate can say the same.
Oh, yeah. You know, we have a client, they're saying, I need to get out. I need to go walk. They just got here from another part of the state. They went out and bought some ice cleats, and they're walking around the neighborhood with their low vision 5 miles yesterday.
Nice.
They probably like to be out in Kincaid, but again, it's getting someone to come alongside. You know me, I've been training for Ironman Alaska, which was canceled, so we're not having it in 2023. But I got to get to the YMCA to go swimming. Yeah. Might need to get to the dome to get on the track. And that is a little tricky when you're doing it all. Maybe on anchor rides, because the thing with anchor rides, it's wonderful, but you could get on the bus and you're there for 45 minutes to an hour, depending on what the pickups and drop-offs look like. So you have to schedule a big chunk of your day out to be able to do these things.
Yeah, I don't think people realize, like, to catch a bus somewhere or to get anchor rides, it's a scheduling. Mm-hmm. I mean, a 1 hour trip is 3 hours, right? Like, I mean, it takes half a day.
Yep. And the bus schedules are pretty good, but they vary, especially with weather. Mm-hmm. And as far as ridership goes, I do want to touch base on the buses are generally pretty full. I used to feel like, why are we paying for these buses that drive around empty
and with one person on it?
And they're not. And people can get on and off real quick at one stop or the other. But the bus experience is something that it's hard to encourage because nobody really wants to do it unless they have to. But it's a pretty pleasant ride. You can get on your phone. You can get on your computer. You can do really whatever you want while you're getting from A to B. Mm-hmm. And I believe that's only $2 a ride, $4 a day.
Mm-hmm. And students get it
free.
Free.
Yeah. And seniors too.
All right. So we are past our 40-minute break. If you're just joining us, my guests today are Chief Executive Officer C.B. Brady and Program Director Nate Kyle from the Alaska Center for the Blind and Visually Impaired. If you have a question for C.B. or Nate, or just a comment you'd like to make about today's topic, please give us a call after our break, and we will get you on the air. Don't wait until, 10:56, because it'll be too late. So call us shortly. After this short break, we'll continue with more of our conversation. I'm Prentice Pemberton. You're listening to Line One, your health connection on Alaska Public Media.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line One on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
One of the greatest honors for a public media station is delivering on its promise to provide quality programming and news you can trust to the communities it serves. What you hear on air is the result of a dedicated team working together to bring you the best. It's a privilege to be a part of your day. Thank you for listening, for your feedback, and for your support.
Welcome back to Line One, your health connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. If you're just tuning in, my guests today are Chief Executive Officer C.B. Brady and Program Director Nate Kyle from the Alaska Center for the Blind and Visually Impaired. If you have a question for my guests or a comment about today's topic, please give us a call or send us an email. Our Anchorage number is 907-550-8433. You can call us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752, and you can email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. Okay, so volunteer opportunities are there for folks who want them, it sounds like.
Yes.
I would encourage anyone, because we all know that volunteering and doing charity work and helping people out is good for our health. Mm-hmm. It's good for yes. our own mental health and mm-hmm. our own sense of connection. And I can imagine, you know, driving Nate to, you know, to go work out, and Nate's a talker. Like, mm-hmm. so you get some good stories and, mm-hmm. and connect with people that you don't know and do something good. So reach out. And if it's not.
And it's education.
Yeah.
You know, people learn, what are the different stages of blindness? Why mm-hmm. why am I called blind, but I still have some vision? Why? There's all sorts of those conversations that people find interesting because it's sort of off topic.
Yeah. And it's not common knowledge.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did a lot of that talking about the different types of blindness and the language. For anybody who wants to go back, May, our shows are all available on podcasts, so anybody can listen to them at any time, just at Alaska Public Media. All right, so I know there's something else you wanted to talk about, Nate, and that's this youth program. You brought it up. You mentioned it.
Yes.
Yeah, can you talk a little bit about that as we sure. wind down towards our end?
So youth programs, we do two a year. We do one over the ASD spring break, and then we do one in the summertime. And it's a youth transition program. So it's taking youth, blind, low vision, ages 14 to 18 who are in school, and up to 22 if they're in a, you know, maybe a trade program, if they're at the university, and we bring them in for 4 to 5 days. And we do all things that are going to prepare them for the workforce, whether it's mock interviews, resumes, going out to Diamond Center and walking around to different businesses and asking them if they're hiring, introducing themselves, elevator speeches. And then we may go and, you know, visit an employer. Like one year we did sustainable businesses. So we were over at Remade. And they were in mm-hmm. there, and they're building, they're putting together the carpets out of old recycled jeans. And then we went to the local hydro farm where they do youth at risk intervention. Mm. And we went through their entire place and all this, the ins and outs of hydroponic, what their goals are to connect with youth at risk and other local businesses. So it's an opportunity for these youths to get something that if we weren't there, they might not. And so for blind, low vision youth, they need that first job. You know, they don't necessarily have the opportunity to go to McDonald's. It's you know, we're at a 70% unemployment rate in our demographic. So the earlier we can get them exposed to the workforce and to what goes into that, the more successful they'll be. And then we can even get youth and adults connected with DVR for a 6-week work experience program. And that's kind of like our old OJT, where they will pay for it. Mm-hmm. We find an employer, they pick up all the skills, being to work on time, dressing in the appropriate attire, communicating, checking in with supervisor timesheets, all of those tasks. And so that's what is rolled into that youth program, and socializing with their peers. We've had blind students come in from Sulcha, 15, 16 years old, never have been around another blind person.
Wow.
And they find out, wow, the same challenges that I have. How do I put toothpaste on my toothbrush? Oh, I can just squirt it in my mouth and then brush my teeth versus painting my toothbrush right. with toothpaste. You know, they learn all these neat things that are very important to us, you know, just acquiring knowledge.
It's cool.
70% unemployment rate?
Yes.
Yeah, national 70. Average, yeah.
And then the 30% who are, it's not even, not necessarily full-time employment. Mm. I mean, yeah, the 30% who are, it's really hard for them as well.
What's the biggest challenge there to employment? I mean, I can imagine lots of them, but is it a lack of retraining, awareness, people not, or are they scared to work? Like, what do you think the big...
There are two huge problems.
Okay.
One is... They go hand in hand. If when I was an employment specialist, I'd call an employer and say, hey, I have a blind, low vision person who has these great skills. We've taught them how to use Word, Excel spreadsheets. And they say, oh, that's a liability. Mm-hmm. We can't have a blind person here. They're going to trip someone. They're going to knock something over. Mm-hmm. And so since that is a common theme, then blind people are often moving with that expectation that they're going to get rejected because of their blindness. And so they don't necessarily pick up all the skills because they don't feel that they're going to be able to get connected in the workforce anyway. So those two things do happen. And it's the low expectations that others have for blind people fuels the problem.
That's well said. It's education for sure. I think it's the number one thing holding people back, and you're blind. You can't do that. And that's, you know, there are certain things you can't do, but there's a heck of a lot we can. And what Nate's talking about, I just want to share with anybody out there, is we also do blind sensitivity training and workplace assessments.
Okay.
So if, for example, the railroad comes across quite a few blind or low vision people, we train them every year on how to interact, as far as things as if you don't just grab a blind person. And some people normally feel like that's the right thing to
pull
do.
Pull them.
Yeah, like this way.
Yeah.
So blind sensitivity training, it's very cost effective and it's quick. And then we do these workplace assessments, which we don't get asked a lot, but it's very helpful on how to set up a workplace so that the employer can make sure that blind, low vision individual feels comfortable. And the other thing I'd say, having been working at the center for so long, the blind and visually impaired are some of the most dedicated hard workers that you'd ever meet. Jocelyn, who answers our front desk amongst a million other things, she's the most efficient worker. She doesn't let a minute go by.
No.
It's fascinating. So there's benefits that every demographic can provide, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Isn't it covered under like the ADA, the American Disabilities Act?
Well, there's variations, because that only covers an employer who has up to so many employees. So if you just, a small place, have 6, 10 employees, you may slip under the radar.
That's accurate.
And that's unfortunate, because then you feel like, hey, I don't have to follow that law. But if you examine the law, it's put into place to better our society. And you're kind of saying, well, I don't want to have to do that. So it's very thought provoking, but when we do get closer to the end, I want to end up with a really good story that I think encapsulates a lot of the stuff we've been talking about. So,
yeah, well, we can go ahead and move towards that, but I do want to make one comment about that employment thing. I mean, I think people underestimate the abilities of people in wheelchairs, people who are blind, people who are deaf. Sure. Like, I mean, we don't know what they're capable of. And like, I know that the training center and all this stuff that you all are doing over there makes it, I mean, people are incredibly resourceful. It can do all sorts of stuff if you just give a few accommodations. It doesn't seem like it has to be that big of a deal, but people have this preconceived notion, like, Nate, you're blind, and now I talk really loud at you, right? And you're like, I'm not deaf.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes.
So people have this sort of built-in bias against hiring somebody who's different.
And a fear of vocabulary. Just even saying, I'll see you tomorrow. Oh, geez, I'm sorry. I know you can't see me tomorrow. It's like, no, that's totally normal.
Yeah, it's just a figure of speech. We're not going to overthink this.
Maybe when you say over there, that one's a little harder, but.
Yeah, look over there, Nate.
Yeah.
So if I say see you tomorrow, Nate, you're not going to be mad?
No. Like, if I say catch you later, I'm not going to be grabbing you.
Actually catching me? All right. We are sort of coming down towards the end, so I'd like to... I'd like to hear your story and get some final thoughts from you all as we wrap up.
It's like my little case study, and it's happening right now. We had a client come to us, and she said, it's okay for me to speak about this. So I won't divulge her name. She came from Fairbanks, said, I'm actually going to transition to live in Anchorage. I'll go to training 6 months at the center. She spent the last 30 years in Fairbanks. She was told at some point, 20 years ago, that if she worked, she would lose her benefits in her medical insurance. And so she has a significant situation. She's type 1 diabetic, comes with all kinds of medical things. And so she kind of stayed in that mindset that she wouldn't be able to work, single mom. And as she shared this at our fundraiser, it got to the point last December where she wanted to just take her life. She had this all planned out. And she was ready to throw in the towel because, when you don't have work and you don't have that purpose, it just compounds any mental health problems. We got her connected with the center, did an assessment, came here. Not only has she just thrived in all of these ways where she will say her life is revolutionized, but now she has entered into this program called the BEP program, Business Enterprise Program, federal program. It's also called the Randolph-Shepard Act, and it allows blind, low-vision people to become licensed vendors to basically own and operate coffee shops, cafeterias, different types of vending locations like that in state and federal buildings. She is in that program. She's going through the training. She's been excelling. She's done all these modules, job shadowing. She's going through a business plan part of it right now. And in April, she will be opening in the licensed vendor to operate the brand new, newly remodeled little coffee shack in the Nesbitt Courthouse.
Huh.
And she'll also have the vending locations over in the Boney Courthouse. And so she has gone from 0 to 60 in just this last 8-9 months by connecting with us, by understanding that these things were navigable. She just needed a support network. And once she knew all that, she saw this open runway in front of her. She put in all the work and effort.
Right.
And there are many people out there just like her that just have a lot of misconceptions, preconceived notions, or dealing with their fears. And they just need to know that there's supports available.
Yeah, I think you get told so often that you can't do something or this is how it is, and by people who probably don't know, right? And mm-hmm. then just connecting with the right people and not feeling alone anymore, and that isolation, which is comes full circle with what we were talking about just on a day-to-day basis of isolation. But people can get their whole lives isolated and just be stuck in that fear place. So mm-hmm. that's a great story.
She's going to really succeed. I mean, just having watched her grow from wanting to end your life to running her own business, it's she's going to knock it out of the park for sure. She's super energetic, nice, helpful. She like all of us that are low vision, we try to hide our blindness a little bit. And so a lot of people probably won't even know. But was the Randolph-Shepard Act, was that 1922? Around there?
Ooh, I want to say in the 30s. And it has its whole history of amendments and everything. And but yeah, it was,
sure, it was
early part of the century.
Set up for the disabled a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so... But I say that because I just really want to encourage the people who maybe they have their adult, you know, their 30-year-old something son who's been living with low vision. They're in the basement. They're depressed. Say, son, we're going to go to the center. Your uncle, your sister, or you, just make the call. Maybe you connected with us 20 years ago and it was very challenging. Maybe you weren't in a place in life, but we're still here. So reach out again. And, you know, I say that the Center for the Blind, we're in Spinard. It carries its own stigma, but I say we're a hole in the wall where people find hope.
Yeah, it's good.
Love it. Just like James, the doctor who called, he hadn't been in 4 years, and he called and said, I think I need some help.
And it's a place of community. It really is, because you go in there and there's a bunch of other guys bumping around and knocking the walls with canes and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's a place of, like I said, community and comfort. And we get a lot of people to come by just for a cup of coffee after they've trained. So,
yes, come on
down. Keep in touch with us.
It sounds like a nice place to be, and I think I might have to stop by and have a visit myself.
Give you a tour.
All right. Nate, any final thoughts? You just got a couple seconds here.
Final thoughts. This is a big one for us. If you think you can or you think you cannot, you are right. Mm-hmm. And that's a Mr. Ford quote. And we think you can.
Right.
All right. On that note, I appreciate Nate and Kyle for joining me. Thanks for spreading the word. I think it's an important topic. My thanks also to Line One producer Madeline Rose and to our audio engineer today, Chris Hyde. For all of us at Line One, we appreciate you taking the time to join us today. Till next time, I'm Prentice Pemberton. Have a great day, Alaska.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.